The Monty Show, Tuesday, August 21st, 2018. Daniel Murphy's a Chicago Cub. We're saved! That's a lie. Hi, Jay.
Hey.
How are you?
Just doing great, you know.
Aren't you excited? Just Murph is a Cub.
Another great day. Another great day.
You're not excited?
Yeah, I am. It's a great move.
Yeah, clearly inspired them as they're going to lose tonight in Detroit. We'll talk about that coming up. What does the teardown of the Washington Nationals say about Bryce Harper? Why didn't they trade him? What is Ohio State doing with Urban Meyer? Could Kobe Bryant play in the Big Three? Name me one player that you'd love to see in the Big Three. One guy. Just kind of put it in your head. And if you say Jimmer, I'll break your leg. It might be that kind of show today.
I think it will be.
MTV had their VMAs and nobody noticed. And oh, by the way, Jake thinks the earth is flat. Well, at least 34% of the people your age, millennials, think the earth is flat.
Right.
Does that surprise you that your fellow millennial thinks the earth is flat?
No, not at all.
Like, that's bizarre to me that millennials think the earth is flat. There's a study, and it's and I'll just describe it. We'll talk about it later. But you dumbass, I mean millennials, could be that show. 34% of millennials now believe that the earth is flat, which is to say only 66% of millennials believe the earth is round.
Yeah, man, the age of the iPhone.
Get on the record. What's the iPhone got to do with anything?
It's the information age. Everybody wants to read, and everybody wants to obsess on health and whether the earth is flat and what Trump just said and how that affects Michael Cohen and how the world's going to end because it's flat instead of round.
But you're that guy. You're on your phone constantly.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean I believe the earth is flat.
Well, then what the hell's the phone got to do with
That's
anything?
What I'm saying, but...
What are you saying? I don't get it.
I'm saying millennials don't watch TV. They read. They're on their phone. It's a mobile age. That's all they do is read.
So they read about the earth being flat?
Yes, they read conspiracy theories. They read everything.
They read Kyrie?
Yeah.
Who infamously, Kyrie Irving, thinks the earth is flat. Would Kyrie be like the ultimate three-on-three player?
Yeah, probably.
I think he probably would. Hey, I do want to start with the Chicago Cubs because I'm the 26th guy on the roster. We acquired Daniel Murphy for somebody you've never heard of, a A-ball player, from the Washington Nationals today, and it was part of I'm not going to say they tore it down, Jake, but they also traded Matt Adams for cash considerations, which is to say they gave him back to the St. Louis Cardinals. And the Dodgers, as it turned out, claimed Bryce Harper before the Nationals pulled him back off of revocable trade waivers. This is a little surprising to me. Before we get into what Murph means to the Cubs and whatnot, it's a little surprising to me that the Nationals waited this long to tear it down. Are you surprised that this happened this week and today and right now? I'm a little surprised by it.
I mean, it just says to me that they don't have vision. They don't have there's a lack of just, just where are we at as a team? Like, how do you not see that you're not going to do anything this year? Like, it's clearly just not there. And so for me, I just say, like, what are you guys doing? Like, what are you working towards? If you're not going to win, but you have all this great talent, like, what are you doing? If you want to burn it down, then burn it down. But just get to it. Like, trade Bryce Harper. Get the value back for him. Don't let him go, out into the market and get paid and you get nothing in return.
And do it at the deadline. Doing it in waivers, it has never been comfortable. It's not the best way or the easiest way to do it. Because I think if you're the Washington Nationals right now, you have two choices. You either trade him or you re-sign him to a long-term deal. Because if you do neither, you're going to lose him and you're going to get nothing in return.
Yeah.
And I think that would be a tragic loss for the Washington Nationals and their fan base. And look, I think part of this story is that, I think this does vindicate Dusty Baker.
Yeah.
I think he got a bad rap after last year.
Yeah, I mean, they clearly fired him early. They clearly let him go without a solid backup plan. And I think, Martinez hasn't exactly lit the world on fire with his managing style.
Well, Murph went out of his way today to say, hey, I love that guy.
That
and
may be
he's
true.
He's the right man for the job. I don't think Dave Martinez is the problem that everybody's made him out to be.
It's not that he's a problem. He's not the right solution. And there's a big difference.
But is it because is it because he's not Dusty Baker? And I do think that some of this is that team was loyal to Dusty Baker, and I think they feel, I'm not going to say there's betrayal, but just reading some of the local columnists in Washington, I do think that those players felt really let down that they didn't bring him back.
Yeah, I mean, by firing a manager before the players want you to, you're essentially quitting on that roster, right? Like, you're saying, hey, you guys aren't successful, which is we're going to put the blame on the manager, and, you know, we need to change it at the manager position. And in turn, what they should have done is they should have just stuck it out, and they should have just said, like, hey, we're going to go with this. And this
would
goes
you
back
have fired
to my,
Dusty Baker?
Probably not. I think failing the way he did and the way that club did really sucks. I mean, you got, again, I'd just like to say, I mean, Wade Davis owned you in the playoffs. Like, oh. And I think I want to say he was in the 50s for pitches that inning when he struck out Bryce. That was the culmination of their season. And I think, again, though, that was an emotional decision by the front office.
I could be wrong about this. And if I'm wrong, please correct me. I believe you said when Bryce struck out, you had the guy you wanted in the situation you wanted, and he let you down.
Yeah.
I mean, you had Bryce Harper at the dish. So I would not have fired Dusty Baker. And I do think that this is a hangover from what's happened to them the last couple of years in the postseason. And I almost think it's imperative that they move on from Bryce Harper, which is why I'm still surprised that they didn't trade him.
Yeah.
But I look at the moves that they are making. Sure, they got some salary relief with Daniel Murphy, but Daniel Murphy is going to go to Chicago, and I think he's going to be a major contributor for the Cubs. His bat, they lost again tonight in Detroit 2-1. They're just not hitting right now. They're not doing anything well offensively. Their bats are terrible. Their approach at the plate is terrible. Their base running's terrible. Their defense is still outstanding. And believe it or not, we've completely flipped the script in Chicago because their pitching's outstanding. Kyle Hendricks was great tonight, except he got hit in the first and the second inning, which he always does. But he gives up 2 runs in, I think, 7 innings. You got to be pretty happy with that.
I mean, that's a winnable outing. I mean, that, in my opinion, that's a game you should win. I mean, I don't care who you're playing. You could be playing the Red Sox. I really don't care. If your pitcher gives up 2 runs in 7 innings, that's a game you should win.
That's damn
like,
good work.
Like, that's like, I don't know what more you want from the guy. I mean, especially in a time when you've got Chatwood making spot starts because of injuries and, you know, like, you got to win on the days you get good outings.
Yes.
And to not win on a day when Hendricks, who's been up and down all year, but he gave you a good outing, around 7 innings and 2 earned. I mean, that's a great outing for him.
Yeah, I hate this Cubs team. I'm just not comfortable with it. And he goes 7 innings, 10 hits, 2 earned, a walk, 3 Ks, 94 pitches.
Yeah, and the Tigers, a better team would have touched him up a little more.
Yeah,
but the Tigers ran themselves out of several innings. But it's the Tigers, you know.
Yeah, I'm amazed by it. And listening to the score in Chicago today, Joe Maddon was on the radio there.
Yeah.
And then the Murphy trade happens. Albert Almora is on the radio there. Almora, for some reason, decided the right thing to do was to announce he had a wrist injury the last 2 months. I mean, this team is – it just is – there's something wrong with the Cubs. I don't know what that is. Then, of course, the elephant in the room is Yu Darvish. Yu Darvish, it was announced today, is done for the year. Shut down. Won't have surgery. He's just not going to pick up a baseball for 2 months. He has a, quote, stress reaction in his elbow. And essentially what they're saying is that the muscles in his arm are just tired. He has thrown a lot, and his arm simply needs at least 6 to 8 weeks of rest. Is this catastrophic? Because it certainly feels that way. And I know that the Cubs got Cole Hamels, and I know that John Lester, who goes tomorrow in Detroit, his last start was magnificent after pitching batting practice for a few weeks. I get it. If you had anybody other than Chatwood in that rotation, you're fine. But because Yu Darvish has been one of the worst signings in Cub history to date, I think you're in real trouble here. This is a catastrophe. It's the 21st of August. You've got 10 days to do something other than nothing to find a pitcher. because that's when, you know, the waiver period ends, and really your rosters are frozen outside of your organization. How catastrophic is this in your opinion? Because I admit I have blue shaded glasses on. I think this is a catastrophe. I really do.
I mean, I just think it's not a catastrophe from you know, where they're at for the year standpoint. I don't know that him being in the rotation makes them a, you know, a 15 win more team, if you will. Like, I don't, you know, are they leading the division by like 8 games if he's pitching for them the whole year? Well, I don't know. But what I do know is that, in my opinion, the guy's had an arm issue for a long time, and you've let it kind of fester, and you haven't really done anything serious with it. Like, you've rested him, you've done hemmed a rehab,
and hemmed and hawed.
Yeah, but I mean, I think they've put effort into it. They've tried to do everything they can to heal it without just doing TJ. And I understand that on some level, but at the same time, I'm just sitting here saying, you're in your winning window. You can't afford to mess around. He should have had TJ months ago at the beginning of the year when he first had it. I'm serious.
But they say his ligament's intact.
I don't care what it is. His arm is not healthy. If you're telling me you're having a stress reaction from an inning rehab start, your arm's not healthy. It's just not.
It is a stress reaction in his elbow, a tricep strain, and this is after the fact that he was rehabbing from a shoulder injury. And they say that his UCL, his ulnar collateral ligament in his elbow, is 100% intact.
Okay, then maybe it's something in his shoulder.
I don't know.
I'm just telling you.
I don't know.
I do know. It's either his elbow's not healthy or his shoulder's not healthy. Because
Which you would suspect his elbow is an issue.
Well, it's either his elbow. That's where I would go first because of the way he uses his arm and because of his mechanics. I mean, you just watch that guy pitch and you're asking how long is it going to be till he gets hurt.
And we've said this 1,000 times on the show, whether it was Shelby Miller with the Diamondbacks. I mean, pick the guy. Anytime you're talking about tricep, bicep, forearm, and he's had all three issues this year.
And now his tricep is ailing, quote unquote.
Yeah, like, this is a guy that there's an elbow ligament issue. And I don't know how you explain it. I'm not a doctor. I'm not Theo Epstein. But you're paying this guy $21 million a year for the next 5 seasons.
And that's the thing. That's the positive side of this, though, in my opinion. If you take care of this now, if you just bite the bullet, give him what he needs, whatever the surgery, major injury, recovery period is, just do it. Like, if it's his shoulder, do it. If it's his ligament, do it. Like, figure it out. Take it, you know, and get him through the next year where he's going to miss the whole season recovering.
Well, that's the scary part, is that you're going to pay this guy $42 million, and he's going to have made 8 starts with a 4-point ERA. And I don't know any team that can absorb that, because let's just be real about it. The real chance of him missing the 2019 season,
there's a real chance of that. I think he's going to.
Well, I hope that this stress reaction thing where you're out 6 to 8 weeks, you don't throw.
Bro, you better have some scientific style offseason where you just figure out like how to make your arm better.
Yeah. But that's what he did last year. Remember, because what was his offseason last year? I was fat. I was mentally fatigued. I was tipping pitches. I was out of shape. So we took all of last season, got in dynamic shape, came back ready to go. And he's been nothing short of a disaster from the moment he showed up in Mesa. I don't think you fixed that. By the way, Chris Bryant took batting practice on the field today. Regular old batting practice with the club. I think that's a really good sign. But I still don't think that this is a World Series contending Chicago Cub team. And it's remarkable to me that the National League is as crappy as I can remember it in recent memory. You know, I'm sure there's a season I tried to find it today and I couldn't find it. This is as bad as the National League has been in a long time, because there's not a clear number one, hey, we're the best team in the National League. Because that's the Chicago Cubs by record. And they're not the best of anything. Like, mm-hmm. they are just not the best of anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so my point is, you're having this kind of season in a massively down year. That doesn't leave me feeling high hopes for the next 3 to 5 years. Where is this team?
I think each year is kind of different for why you're down each year is different. Like, I don't think last year's struggles, like on the field, sure, they might be the same, but you never know what's going on in the clubhouse. You never know what allegedly is wrong with the team. Like, it's different every year, and I just think that, you know, you can blame Chili Davis for their awful approach. You can blame whoever you want. At the end of the day, the players are going to win and lose games. It's up to them to fix it, and I just think I like the Murphy signing for more than what he brings to the field. There's a mentality with him.
He's a pro.
He's an absolute pro. And again, can I just point out real quick why today, listening to the Score talk about it, why are we talking about his comments about the gay community and him being a strong – why are we talking about all that? I don't see any need to talk about it. He made the comments in 2015. It's 2018. Get over it. Get past it.
Yeah.
I just don't see it. Like, I don't see why it's a big deal.
Yeah, but boy, the Score really took liberty with that today.
Yeah.
And let's forget who said it, because I don't think it matters what host it was. But it's really surprising that the Cubs acquire Daniel Murphy today. They break the news on the radio to Albert Almora. Hey, you guys just acquired Daniel Murphy. And the first question is not, oh, well, how does this affect the clubhouse? Baseball-wise, how does he fit into your lineup? The first question was, hey, did you know that he came out against gay marriage and homosexual lifestyle? Like, what the hell are you doing?
I just don't, like, I don't see the mindset there. Like, you're trying to stir the pot instead of having a baseball conversation. What that really says to me on some level is maybe, like, there's only two reasons you would do that. You either just want to stir the pot, or you're not confident enough about your knowledge about his game, his individual game, and what he brings to the field to talk about it.
And the truth of what Daniel Murphy said, and I went back and looked at it,
mm-hmm.
Daniel Murphy essentially said that homosexuality does not fit in with my religious beliefs, which, with who I am as a Christian, I don't believe that homosexuality is right, but who am I to judge? And I have no problem with gay athletes in a clubhouse. I would not... you know, ostracize them or treat them poorly is essentially what the conversation was about.
Yeah, he doesn't agree with the belief, but he loves the people. That's what it is.
Okay, yeah. Hate the sinner, hate the sin, love the sinner, whatever it is. Why bring that up now to a guy who just found out that Daniel Murphy is on his team? And by the way, in that same interview on The Score, I probably listened to The Score too much, but on that same interview with The Score in Chicago, Albert Almora Jr. admitted he at one point in the last 2 years had never heard of Eddie Vedder or Pearl Jam. Do you really think he's going to know what Daniel Murphy said in 2015 about homosexuals?
No.
Like, and by the way, this is a guy that appears on your radio station every Tuesday, 2 hours after Joe Madden appeared on the radio station today, as he does at noon every Tuesday on The Score in Chicago. Is it appropriate to put a guy on the spot like that? I wouldn't. That's not what I would do.
No, I just don't think it's the best use of the time. It's not, you're not, like, again, you're just trying to stir the pot. You're trying to cause drama. And I don't know why we need to do that.
But that's what the story of this season has been for the Cubs. That's really what it is. And it is, it's frustrating. But, you know, listening to the Nationals radio station in Washington, they're not being very kind at all. I listen to, you know, I listen to sports talk all day long. And frankly, I don't love what I hear. And this is a little self-serving. I'm not the greatest sports talk radio host ever, certainly. But there's just some weird stuff going on in markets. I said this yesterday that I'll say it again. We like to bitch and moan as sports fans. We love to complain as sports fans. Listening to the Mighty 1090 this morning, complaining about the Padres. It's an off day, man. It's an off day.
Yeah.
and you're coming out of, they're off on Monday. They're in Colorado on Tuesday. Austin Hedges hit a home run to put them up 4-3 tonight. You know, I would expect that if you win this game, things will be positive. But in San Diego, it's all negative. In Chicago, it's all negative. In Washington, D.C., it's all negative. You know, I listened to a little bit of ESPN 101 in St. Louis after they got Matt Adams today. All negative. I'm like, okay, is there any sports radio show in this country that likes what a team is doing?
What do you like about the Cubs?
Not much right now, but this is a team that is really struggling.
But that's what I'm saying, though.
Five straight games, scoring one run.
Hold on, but you're talking about sports fans being negative overall, which I 100% agree with. I think it's super easy to be negative and just kind of ride that train in a conversation. Totally with that. But you're a Cubs apologist. You love the Cubs. They're your team. And
for life, since I was
born. Wouldn't you say that you're mostly negative?
Right now I am. 2016 I wasn't negative. Last year I really wasn't negative.
Even when they won the World Series, Joe Maddon managed the game wrong. That's what everybody said. You won the World Series, and you're complaining about the way Joe Maddon managed his pitching staff.
Yes. Well, he put a year in that with Aroldis Chapman.
You won the World Series.
He did, correct.
I don't care what he did.
And we've said on the show, though, you need to give me credit for this, mm-hmm. that I'm not a manager, I'm a talk show host, and they won the World Series, so I guess it's all good. I don't like that it's Gleyber Day in New York and in Yankee Stadium. I'd love to have Gleyber Torres on my team. We wouldn't have traded for Daniel Murphy today. I can guarantee you that. But yeah, I think you're right. When it comes to the Cubs, I have been negative. The Bears. Look at the Bears. Like, I actually am one of the few people in the world that likes Mitchell Trubisky.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't think I'm always negative. I'm overwhelmingly positive about the Padres. I think the Padres are in a great spot. I'm the only one who thinks that. You know? But I just, it's scary that I flip around the dial. And I hear a lot of negative from talk radio.
Yeah.
And I have always been a believer that you need to root for the fans that root for the team that your listeners support. I'm not telling you to be rah-rah and everything's cheery, but you have to, it's on some level, find something positive.
Well, I just think it's a full picture perspective. Like, yeah, of course you're going to have negative. Of course you can rip a guy, whatever. But you got to at least have some positive, too. Right? Like, hey, Adrian Peterson, you're not an all-pro, bud. You're not. Your knee's an embarrassment.
How about that guy today?
You're not an all-pro. You might be a Hall of Famer, though.
Adrian Peterson met with the media in Washington today, and AP said, anybody that says that, you know, I'm done or, you know, that doesn't think I'm productive, they don't know football. Anybody that tells you I'm not productive doesn't know football. Bro, I watched you in Arizona last year. You weren't productive.
Yeah.
You had moments, but you're not the same guy. You know, like, that was hysterical. But anyway, I wish there was a little more pot. I wish there was a little more. I like what you
full
said.
Full picture.
Full picture on what's going on, which I tend to give with the Cubs.
Sure.
I say the good things that are going on. Hey, good to see that Kyle Hendricks is pitching well. Wish he could get out of the first without giving up, you know, a six-pack. That'd be nice. John Lester made some adjustments. He's pitching better. Quintana had a good start last time out. Chatwood sucks and will always suck and has always sucked. But hey, now the sun's going to rise in the east tomorrow, and I'm going to wake up and get out of bed if the creek don't rise.
Mm-hmm.
It's all good, right? Will the Cubs go to the World Series? Will the Cubs win the National League this year?
I think they'll win the National League. I don't think they're on the World Series, though. Well,
if you win the National
League, I think they're going to win a divisional series, but the National, I don't know.
NLCS, are they the best team in the National League?
Yeah, they are right now.
Are they better than the Braves, the Phillies?
Yeah, they're better than both of those teams.
The Brewers and the Cardinals.
Yes, they're better than all those teams. The only team that could be better than them is the Dodgers, in my opinion.
Cardinals are three back.
Great.
They beat a bunch of crappy teams.
By the way, they haven't done anything all year. Talk to me when you've led the division. Have they even led the division once?
No, the Brewers have led the division for most of the year. I mean,
the Cubs have led the division a long time now.
3 weeks?
Been more than that.
That's my point. The Cubs have the Brewers have overwhelmingly led the National League Central this year. They have predominantly been in first place. And yeah, the Cubs have been within a game, then it was three, then it was a half game, then it was five, and now they're up, 2.5 over the Brewers? Yeah, the Brewers have been in first place longer than the Cubs have this year. More than the Cubs have this year. And a lot of people don't realize that. That's all I'm saying, not to be redundant. A couple other baseball notes. Should the Dodgers have acquired Bryce Harper? Is that the move that puts them finally over the hump in the West? Because they're a half game or 2.5 games out. The Rockies are 2 games ahead of the Dodgers right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is, they're, you know, the Dodgers are awfully close to not making the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be a dogfight to the end. I mean, I think the Rockies have definitely proved themselves. You can't say it's a fluke anymore. I mean, you're coming down to the end of the year, and you're still right there contending for the division.
And yet you give up a ton of runs if you're the Rockies, and you're still in second place. You're minus 12.
That's the West, though.
The Dodgers, Okay, I don't mean to correct you. The Dodgers are plus 111. The Diamondbacks are plus 81. And the second place half game out Rockies are minus 12. Like, how the hell is that possible? How are the Dodgers plus 111?
Because I think they play in a... The Rockies have that kind of a stat because you play a ton of high-scoring games and you give up... When you lose, you don't lose 2-1 or 3-1. You lose 14-0.
94 runs.
Yeah.
Juxtaposition of 486 runs given up by the Dodgers, 485 given up by the Diamondbacks. With all this offense, that's what's so startling about the Dodgers. It's not offense.
No, they need a pitcher.
They need an arm. And that's why I say the Bryce Harper move, that's really cool, and that'll put people in the yard.
He doesn't want to be a Dodger, though, in my opinion. He wants to be a Cub. Like, that's where he wants to be.
Well, but I also think there's a good chance he wants to be a National. Because there's only two ways, I think, that this can end.
That's a mistake for him, in my opinion. I don't like him being a career Nat at this point. I mean, they clearly haven't. They just don't make good choices. Like, now looking back with where they're at now, the Dusty Baker thing is clearly a mistake.
Yeah.
And he failed in that moment. For sure he failed in that
moment. But is paying Steven Strasburg all that money a mistake? For a guy, and you love him when he's healthy, but he's never helped. This guy, he's barely a 20-start-a-year guy.
But what's worse, a Strasburg who barely makes 20 starts? Or a
Gio that makes 30 starts, or a Tanner Roark that makes 30 starts?
Or a Bryce Harper who's awful.
Well, and I guess that's the question.
That's a fair question. I mean, Bryce Harper might be on the field, but he's not doing anything for you.
Well, he's hitting bombs. I mean, it's not... I don't think Bryce Harper's been awful. Is he hitting for average? No, he's not. Is he a guy that is capable of carrying your club? Yes. There's any given day he can go on a 6-week run where he's the best player in baseball, and you can rely on that. And I get that he's a 250 hitter. I understand that he's only on base 380, which is not nearly what he's capable of. But the guy does have 30 bombs. The guy does have 23 doubles. I think he's been in the middle of pretty much everything for you. He's played 122 games, which is second only to Trey Turner. So he's durable this year. He just hasn't been all world Bryce Harper. And maybe he never was. I don't know. Maybe he never was. But I think the better comparison is Mike Trout. Would you rather have all-world Mike Trout, who's the best player on the planet right now by most people's estimations, and you are terrible? The Angels are not good. They are not contending.
I don't care how far away they are. The Nats aren't doing anything either.
Right, but
30 games out or 10 games out is the same thing.
But this is my point. If you trade Bryce Harper to the Dodgers, okay, and you don't get an arm, and you come up half game short in the West, you made a mistake. You need to go and find that arm. If you are the Dodgers, you need to make that trade for, whether it is Gio, whoever it is that's available, because we'll never know really what pitchers are truly available.
Yeah.
You'll never know. But if it is a Gio, a Strasburg, whoever you want to go and try and run down, that would have been a better move than, let's say, Bryce Harper to the Dodgers. Because if the Dodgers had gone out and gotten, you know, any of the pitchers who've been moved, you're making a better move, in my estimation, than Bryce Harper. Now, yeah. Machado's been a nice pickup for them, right? I mean, he's
been everything he's supposed to be.
He had an at-bat last night where we were just like, wow, that's why you got Manny Machado. Because he hit a line drive up the middle to tie the game when you arguably could have tried to hit that ball to Burbank, and he didn't. He just took a nice, easy swing and drove the ball up the middle to get the RBI.
Yep.
And that's exactly what you need him to do.
Yep.
So I don't think they need a guy like Bryce Harper.
Nobody's blaming you for trying to go out and get Bryce Harper, but it's not the most effective move. It's not the most poignant move.
Yeah. Well, look, I hope that at some point, and this is again just my opinion.
Right.
I hope at some point that Bryce Harper finds a home and that he is able to, you know, to make himself into that superstar that we all believe, because I don't think he's ever been where Mike Trout is right now. And yes, I'm seriously saying that, who's a pitcher that was traded? Cole Hamels. Cole Hamels would have been a better acquisition than Bryce Harper for the Dodgers.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's outlandish. I mean, I think just because Bryce Harper might seem like a star and Cole Hamels allegedly isn't, like, Cole Hamels has achieved a ton in his career. Achieved, actually, in my opinion, achieved more than Bryce Harper's achieved.
Does Bryce Harper ever get to Mike Trout?
Not at this point. I don't think so. No, I mean, winning will take him past Mike Trout in history and in his like legend.
But I think he has to be the focal point.
He's got to be, in my opinion, like the next place he goes, whether he stays in Natitude Land or if he goes to Chicago, wherever he goes,
mm-hmm.
he needs to be like 290, 30 bombs, Mr. Consistent for like 5 years.
And he needs to win.
Yeah.
And this is the Anthony Rizzo conversation we had on this show. Anthony Rizzo will now forever be a Chicago Cub legend because he's got a ring.
Yep.
Bryce Harper is just a guy right now. He's a great guy.
He's that guy where they describe him as Bryce Harper, great national, not a World Series winner.
You know the conversation I thought was brilliant on Mad Dog Radio the other day? Bryce Harper or Stanton? Everybody took Stanton.
Well, he plays in Yankee Stadium.
Well, but he's also, there's a lot that comes with that. That's a lot of pressure. A lot of pressure.
You don't think Bryce Harper has the same amount of pressure on him?
No, not in Washington. No chance. I think Giancarlo Stanton, for the money he's making, for the headlines that he draws, he's an MVP. He goes to New York, and he's expected to be better than he was when he was an MVP, and he's lived up to it. He has absolutely lived up to it. Aaron Judge got hurt. What did Stanton do? He exploded. He took off, carried the team. Didi Gregorius has gotten hurt. He's just going to keep right on going. And you know how he's legit? They're in Florida playing in Miami, and he got a standing ovation when he came up. Like, that tells you that Stanton is a superstar, and he's carrying the weight of the New York Yankees on him like it's no big deal. And I have a lot of respect for that because yeah. It would have been easy for him to go there and collapse. We have seen guys, Alex Rodriguez, I mean, point to the guy you want, Hideki Arabu, who was before your time as a pitcher. But, I mean, how many free agents have gone to New York and Jacoby Ellsbury completely collapsed? A lot of guys have done that. And Stanton not only has gone there and so far performed, he's been better than expectations, and I don't know how that's possible. When you lose Aaron Judge and you're still dynamic and you know that they're going to pitch around you and you are still dynamic, I think that says a hell of a lot about who he is.
Yeah, I don't disagree at all. But I also think, it's the only reason we're sitting here saying that he's got more pressure on him is because it's New York and it's the Yankees. And it's like,
and
I
that's
understand
hard
that,
to deal
I get
with.
It, but it's clearly not hard to deal with. He's clearly not having any trouble with it.
Right, like, but some guys can't deal with that.
But those some guys are not in Giancarlo land. They're not in Bryce Harper land. They're not in Mike Trout land.
But see, I don't
would
know.
Mike Trout fail as a New York Yankee? Would he do what he's doing in Anaheim in New York? Do you believe that?
I can't believe he'd do what he's doing in Anaheim in New York.
I think he'd hit more home runs playing in Yankee Stadium, and I think he'd make more plays in Yankee Stadium playing center field.
And he is a Jersey guy, so he'd be going home. I don't know. Who knows what pressure does? Trout is just so damn good. You can never bet against him. What am I talking about? No, Mike Trout would be great at Yankee Stadium. He's just too talented.
Yeah.
But it's a guy like Bryce Harper, who now we've seen.
Well, it's just creeping in that he's might be mentally soft.
Yeah, we've seen the weakness come through. Can he slam that door and become what like you said, can he be a 280 hitter? What Giancarlo Stanton right now is a 285, 353 on base and a 543 slugger. 896 OPS, 32 bombs, 80 RBIs, 160 strikeouts, by the way. 26 doubles. He's got 137. I mean, he leads them
like those,
in
but,
every offensive
but hold
category.
On. Wait, those offensive numbers, I would what you're telling me those are better than what he did in as a Marlin?
Well, he's on the way to being better than what he did with the Marlins, like more impactful.
So we're willing to write off that he's got a not great on-base percentage, that his OPS is in the 800s for the premier hitter in the Yankees lineup. It should be in the 950s. That would be like that would be ideal.
That would be utterworldly. Utterworldly.
But that's what he does.
But here's the thing. Bryce Harper's got better numbers. That's what's this, and this is what I struggle with, other than the batting average, because Giancarlo's hitting 40 points higher. He's got a better on-base percentage. He's got an equivalent slugging percentage, and he's an 891 OPS guy. Yet Bryce Harper's on a team that's floundering and failing.
But wait, Bryce Harper, no, that's not the conversation is, yet Bryce Harper is a guy who's a bust this year, and Giancarlo's some hero.
Yeah. It's in that. That's my whole point. New York paints you into a different light. It puts you, when you succeed in New York, everything's bigger and brighter. And when you, especially when Judge goes down, and but now Didi's on the list,
they're not succeeding. They're no. Well, they're not competing.
They're well, they're going to the postseason. I have no.
Not in the way they should be. Like well, they might. I'm just saying. Like we have to be careful saying they're succeeding. The Yankees are not succeeding. They're scraping by.
Yeah?
They're scraping by to get into the postseason.
And they're 8.5 games out so of the East, behind behind the
so,
Red
wait,
Sox.
But real quick, so, wait, real quick. So, wait. The Yankees are about in the same place that the Nationals are in their respective divisions. Bryce Harper has pretty much the same numbers, if not better, than Giancarlo.
Yeah.
Yet we're saying Giancarlo Stanton's having some all-world year and Bryce Harper's not, simply because he plays in New York.
And simply because he's not got a 3.5-game lead in the wild card over the Astros and the A's and the Mariners in a very, very competitive American League with elite teams. And I think that matters. And I know it's crazy, but I think it matters.
Oh, winning matters. There's no. Yeah. I'm the guy who says winning defines you.
Absolutely. So that's why Giancarlo Stanton had to get out of Miami, and now he's in New York, and he is perceived as a guy that's carrying that club, and he's got help. Let's not make it out like you know Giancarlo Stanton's the only guy in that
lineup. A bunch of hacks.
Yeah, like, I mean you have guys that are doing the job. But think about this: if I just said to you the Yankees are going to be without Judge, Didi, and Sanchez, because don't forget Gary Sanchez is fat,
ghosting,
doesn't play hard, and is out of shape, and for some reason is on the disabled list because nobody believes he's truly injured.
Yeah.
If I had said to you in March, hey, they're going to be without those three guys, you'd have been like, oh, they're in trouble. They're in trouble. And they're not in trouble. They're going to the postseason. They're going to get Judge back here in 2 weeks, probably.
And this is exactly what I was saying. Like, even though Judge goes down, they're fine. They're going to survive.
They're fine. Yeah. They're fine. But it's only because Giancarlo Stanton, in my opinion, it's only because Giancarlo Stanton has been unbelievable.
So, for the Dodgers, was Bryce going to get Bryce Harper a survivable trade?
No. I think they needed an arm. They needed a Cole Hamels. They needed a guy. And this is the other part of this, and we've spent 38 minutes talking baseball now, so I'll wrap it up by saying this. Theo Epstein has made some really good deals. The Aroldis Chapman deal that cost you so mightily because Gleyber Torres was your all-world prospect and you sent him out to get your closer. Okay, you won a World Series. I agree with that trade.
Justifiable.
But you start looking around now and you're like, hey, was that you, Darvish, signing fantastic? Was, you know, the Jose Quintana trade where you gave up another, you know, Eloy Jimenez, another massive prospect? Was that a great deal? Why is Hector Rondon a closer in Houston? Well, not anymore because Roberto Osuna, that wife beater, girlfriend beater, is now going to be their closer. But Hector Rondon left Chicago and turned into a great closer again. So you start looking at some of these moves, and it's like, what if Gleyber Torres is still here? Okay, well, you won a World Series. Okay, I'll give you that one. What if Hector Rondon is in that bullpen right now?
I still think he's not what he is today.
Okay, what?
I'm not trying to be spiteful. I'm saying I think Rondon needed a
change of scenery. Absolutely.
Time.
I think Theo Epstein's done a great job, and I will forever be thankful that I saw the Chicago Cubs win a World Series. But I think it's incredibly difficult to be a Major League Baseball general manager when expectations are as high as they are in Chicago.
Yeah, no doubt.
And when you go out, and you're right about the $21 million per on Yu Darvish. That's not a huge price tag in today's money.
And I can't blame him for making the deal because, yeah, Jake Arrieta came out and had a hot start to the year. And
Jake's pitched pretty well. Jake Arrieta's had a better season. He's had a season that the Cubs would die to have on their staff.
Yeah.
Sure, Jake Arrieta or Tyler Chatwood?
Well.
But that's the decision that was made.
No, it was not the decision that was made. Oh. It was not. You didn't not sign Arrieta to get Tyler Chatwood. You didn't sign Arrieta because you signed Yu Darvish. Don't try to play
totally
that game.
Disagree.
Don't try to play that game. They didn't send out Arrieta to get Chatwood. They sent out Arrieta because they didn't want to pay him in favor of paying Yu Darvish, a guy who's younger, a guy who they thought would perform for them, and it hasn't worked out. That's a blemish on Theo.
You totally agree that this guy's a 3-year contract. Tyler Chatwood's a 3-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
This is terrible. $38 million over 3 years. They signed him. Did they sign him in January? No. Did they sign him in February? No. March? No. April? No. They signed his ass in early December. Tyler Chatwood had a very nice Christmas. They should have signed Jake Arrieta. Tyler Chatwood, in my opinion, was absolutely signed because you also have to remember, and I agree that there were rumors, and I don't know that it was ever confirmed, and I don't know how you would confirm it, but there were rumors that once they got down the road with Yu Darvish, that they called Jake Arrieta and said, hey, he's going to take $21 million a year. Take it or leave it. And Arrieta said, leave it. And he wound up in Philadelphia.
I agree with it.
Well,
I'm not paying. Dude, you can't sit here and say that you would have paid Jake Arrieta, whatever it was. Wasn't he asking for like 28 to 30?
Yeah, 28 million.
Dude, I'm not paying you that. I'm not paying you that, especially with where they're at when their money situation. I'm not.
Yeah.
Yu Darvish has proved himself and just hasn't worked out because of this injury thing. Like, you can be reminiscent on Arrieta. Chatwood has nothing to do with this. They signed Chatwood because they needed an arm. That's the only reason.
For 3 years.
Okay, but that has nothing to do with Arrieta and Darvish.
You're going to wind up writing Tyler Chatwood a check.
Yeah, you're going to cut his ass. You're going to pay him out and say, see you later, because we'd rather suck than have you in our rotation. You're awful. Go play T-ball.
Like, why are you being so negative about the Cubs, Jake?
Well, because you're telling me that Tyler Chatwood is part of the Arrieta situation.
He was. Because he was part of that. Putting a rotation together is about a puzzle. And you needed Tyler Chatwood because you knew you weren't going to have Arrieta, and you were probably going to be... They were not in the running the way they should have been. I don't know. I could go on. They also hesitated in big deals because they want to go after Bryce Harper, and that's probably going to be a $350 million deal. Because now after this season, that's just as good as, you know, Giancarlo Stanton's deal. He's not getting $400. You know, like, it's just the Cubs have had a tough season, and I think there's still a chance they go to the World Series. I also think there's a real good chance they get knocked out in the first round because they just don't have the starting pitching to contend. We should probably talk something other than baseball for 44
mm-hmm.
minutes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell we're passionate about baseball?
Mm-hmm.
Urban Meyer, speaking of negativity.
Yeah.
The board is going to meet at Ohio State tomorrow, and the conversation will center around what are we going to do with Urban Meyer. And depending on who you believe, Urban Meyer, who's been on a suspension, quote unquote, where he's been gone for 2 weeks and been making his $20,000 a day salary, he's suspended with pay, $20,000 a day. They're going to punish him for this Zach Smith domestic violence situation, the way he handled it, by saying to him, okay, Urban, we're going to sentence you to time served. Welcome back. Which is to say, enjoy your 2-week vacation. It's over. You need to come back to work now. And there are rumors flying all over the Twitterverse. And again, I have no idea if we ever get the truth or not. But Brett McMurphy, amongst others, is reporting that the the management, if you will, at Ohio State went to Urban Meyer and said, hey, we're gonna issue you a short suspension without pay. And Meyer said, no, you're not. And they said, okay, why don't you come back with pay then? All right, great. Good to have you back. Sorry we bothered you. That's essentially what they're saying is going on at Ohio State. Yeah. Because Urban Meyer very clearly runs that university simply because he wins football games.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a real disdain for that.
Yeah.
Because it goes on everywhere. It's why you have a guy like Tom Izzo still employed at Michigan State, even though he had a major domestic violence incident on his staff and in his program.
Yeah.
And did nothing about it. And it happened again. And they kept him on. And really, there was no repercussions for that.
Yeah.
You have situations where LSU, you know, suspended an offensive tackle because he was accused of domestic violence. You have violence on top of violence in college football, and nobody's doing anything about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know how you fix this. I really don't.
I just think it's one of those things where, first of all, this board meeting might as well just be a bunch of boys getting beers at the bar. I mean, it's embarrassing. Like, I don't understand what even the point is. Because we all know they're not going to do anything to Urban. Like, you're not doing anything to Urban because you're too fearful of your image, even though your image is just taking an absolute beating, you know? And I just don't understand why we go to... Because inevitably what ends up happening, right, in all these situations, the common theme for me is we come to a fork in the road. Going left is, oh, Urban, time served. Come on back, win some more football games, you know, the Ohio State. Going right is, hey, we're the Ohio State. We're going to leverage our brand to make a point. Urban, you're suspended for a month. We'll see you later. Or whatever the time may be that, you know, is justified. You know, so we get to that point, and we always go left. Everybody always goes left. Like, oh, my God, Urban, hey, we need you to take a leave without pay for 2 weeks. I know that's really going to hurt your pocketbook.
Would it be okay?
Would it be uncouth for you to go and do that? Would you lose followers on Twitter if that happened?
Would you mind?
Like, how are we so soft on this? Like, how is it acceptable?
This guy's making, and I know the money, I keep saying it, he's making $20,000
a
day.
Yeah.
And he did nothing, if you believe reports, he did nothing to prevent domestic violence. And by the way, they amended his contract in April to include specific guidelines for reporting allegations of domestic violence. And while some verbiage may seem redundant to the university policy and Title IX protections afforded by the NCAA, one legal expert told the USA Today that it follows a recent trend of doubling down on responsibility that coaches have to report misdeeds on their staffs and in their programs following sweeping changes at the NCAA.
But that's where there is no sweeping changes. What changes? Like, this is what...
Well, the paper is what changed. The practical did not. You know, like, the what the policy says on paper changed because we have to put up a good face.
Like, great.
But we can't fire Urban. He wins games.
Yeah, we can't fire Urban. He's the best coach in the history of, you know, college football. Like, this is what I'm saying. Like, it's all great that we want to talk about the AP Top 25 and how the Pac-12 isn't doing what it needs to do. At the end of the day, football in general, both pro and collegiate, and even stretching, you could go down to you know, youth football. Like, there are issues at every level. And I just simply say, like, there's no accountability in football, and it's amazing to me because I think, you know, you don't hear, like, just think about other sports, like, and the output of negativity with these kind of stories in football. You don't hear about it in the NBA. You don't hear about it in the NHL or golf or
Major League Baseball.
Like, you don't hear about this stuff.
You don't hear about, and that's what's so disappointing about this Roberto Osuna thing in Houston.
Yeah, exactly.
Because this is exactly tied to this. You had an organization that was truly the feel-good story of Major League Baseball for probably the last 5-6 years. The Houston Astros, left for dead, lose 100 games, win the World Series. And then you go and sign Roberto Osuna or trade for him from the Blue Jays.
Yeah, you went out of your way to get him.
After a horrendous incident of domestic violence.
Yeah.
And it hasn't even been run through the court system yet, adjudicated. to use a big word.
Yeah.
And yet you traded for this guy, and today you announced he's your closer from here to four.
Yeah.
In a climate where domestic violence is supposedly, you know, the end of the world.
Would any other employer in this country do what they did? Think about this in real life terms. Would anybody realistically go out and sign somebody who, or, you know, like if somebody was unemployed and you knew that they had beat their wife or girlfriend or whatever it is, nobody's signing that guy.
No.
He's not passing a background check. He's not getting a job.
But that's why I always say professional sports, and that includes college sports.
Yeah.
It's not real world. It's not reality. They live in a world where you have NFL players supposedly protesting the national anthem. Like, they're not protesting against the national anthem, yet that's what Donald Trump is telling people. So now that becomes reality.
Mm-hmm.
You have a situation where steroids essentially saved Major League Baseball in 1998 with Maguire and Sosa. But now we've ostracized those two guys from the game, essentially. Barry Bonds was a big part of that. You know, Maguire and Bonds have worked in the game. Sosa is a pariah by a lot of his own doing. Rafael Palmeiro has to play, you know, some independent league baseball, and he's probably better than Chris Davis for the Orioles right now. But those are the guys that took part in saving the game.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but we can't have those guys around because they took steroids.
Yeah,
which
because
saved the game.
Yeah.
The hypocrisy in sports is amazing.
But isn't that difference then? I agree with the hypocrisy thing, massive hypocrisy with that, with the domestic violence stuff. But that situation is unique because, you know, they can be ostracized, and it can be a thing where, hey, you guys cheated, so you're not going to be Hall of Famers, Roger Clemens. But, you know, at the end of the day, you're right. They did save the game. And there's nothing. Like, at least we can write off their sin, their mistake, if you will. There's no writing off beating a woman. Like, you just don't do that.
Yet we do. And this is...
As a society...
I'm trying not to be harsh about this.
Well, I don't think you... But there is no being harsh about it. It's real.
But I feel like we don't... Well, if we're going to be real, I feel like in sports, women don't almost matter.
Yeah.
They're afterthoughts. They're wives and girlfriends. You know, we just got to make sure that, hey, you know, that Zach comes to work every day because our wide receivers are a critical part of our offense and we're trying to win a national championship here.
Yeah.
Like, what do we, really? He's on it. You realize Zach Smith, this receivers coach, his wife sent him a text message saying, hey, you choked me twice. You strangled me in Punta Cana in our place back home. And he said, I know. Was his answer. And now you're trying to say that there's not evidence that he did anything? That was one of the arguments that a booster made. Well, there's no evidence that he did anything. Come on. No. There's plenty of evidence, and there's tons of evidence that Urban knew in text messages.
It's a culture thing, man.
Come on.
It's a culture thing.
But it's a woman. So
it's a culture thing.
Football's more important. You know, it's this get in the kitchen mentality.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's amazing to me that where we are in 2018, we still have inequality. And I'm not talking about, you know, like, Utah has one of the most offset pay gaps. Like, women are horrendously underpaid in the state of Utah. Okay, pay is one thing. There are women being abused by professional athletes. Yet, Roberto Osuna is the closer of the Houston Astros. They traded for him knowing he did that. You have a guy in Urban Meyer. You have a guy in Tom Izzo. And that list just keeps on going. You have guys in positions of power in college athletics who fostered a program, fostered an atmosphere.
An environment.
Facilitated domestic violence by being a passive participant in it. It's no different than what Joe Paterno and Jerry Sandusky did at Ohio State. At Penn State. It's no different than Larry Nassar at Michigan State.
Yeah.
In the USA gymnastics program at Baylor. Like, these things are
endless.
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 The scandals are endless. Oh, I didn't know. Everybody says it. Oh, Pete Carroll couldn't have known that Reggie Bush's parents were living in this awesome house. couldn't have known that Reggie was driving these really nice cars. Okay, well, you either didn't know, which makes you incompetent, or you did know, and that makes you a guy who shouldn't be coaching college football teams. So, Urban Meyer, you either knew that this guy was beating the crap out of his wife several times, and probably more than we ever even reported, because the Punta Cana strangulation that he acknowledged over text message was never reported. So you knew that this guy on multiple occasions beat his wife, and you chose to win football games instead. So you knew, which means you can't be a football coach, or you didn't know, which means you're incompetent, which means you can't be a football coach.
And we're still going to pay him $20,000 a day.
Because he wins. And that's the bottom line. That's why Tom Izzo is still at Michigan State. That's why Larry Nassar was allowed to go on and be a sexual predator for a decade.
Yeah.
It's why Jerry Sandusky was a pedophile for decades, because we couldn't take that Joe Paterno statue down. And then when it came out that Joe Paterno knew that his defensive coordinator and one of his best friends in life was a pedophile, all the fans at Penn State rallied around Joe Paterno and said, "Don't you dare take that statue down." Like, that's what's truly wrong. I don't know how you fix that.
Yeah.
Because we only care about winning. We don't care about kids being molested or girls in gymnastics programs being molested or women of assistant coaches and football players and basketball players being severely beaten and abused. We don't care about that. Roberto Osuna can close games, so let him kick the crap out of his girlfriend. Well, they haven't found him guilty of anything. He's got rights. And he can throw a baseball really hard, so let's let him close a game. I got a problem with that.
Yeah.
And I don't think it goes away. You can find me on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Why don't we talk about killing people with diet soda?
Okay, continue the trend.
So, there was a study that came out today.
First off, do you remember the days when we drank? What are those bigger cases of soda called? Like, it's not the 12er, the 24. Is it a 24?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we used to get those
Gold
36 Dico. Packs.
36ers, yes.
Of 36 packs of diet Mountain Dew so that we could get the double XP on Call of Duty.
Modern
and we
warfare,
drank that
baby.
Stuff in like a day and a half. And now it comes out that they say that heart attacks, strokes, Alzheimer's, dementia, that diet soda, not regular full sugar crap that kills you too, makes you fat, but that diet soda is actually worse for you and makes you fatter than regular soda. Because of the chemicals that are in it and what it does to your brain and how your stomach and your body and your brain react to it. I'm just really glad that I haven't had a soda in, what is it, October 1st of 2015, I gave up soda. And now it's, you know, the 21st of August, 2018. I'm just thrilled with that. But how much soda do we drink in this country?
Oh, it's ridiculous. Just go to Costco. You'll have your answer.
Man.
Just go to Costco.
And the you know what the sad part is? I would love a Diet Dr. Pepper right now.
Yeah, dude.
Ugh, I love Diet Dr. Pepper.
See, but here's
Dr.
the thing.
Pepper.
I wouldn't have an issue drinking it, like, once. There's no problem drinking it once. That's not the issue.
It's prolonged use. They did an 8-year study.
Yeah. I mean, it's no problem having, if I want to go to, if I want to go downtown and have a soda with my pizza for lunch once a week, probably not good for me.
Yeah, and if you don't read a site called brobible.com, you're doing life wrong. Because BroBible is a great site. They published this article in this study that was done over 8 years. Scientists think that repeatedly tricking our body with diet soda could explain why study after study keeps finding that same thing. Drinking diet soda is associated with metabolic syndrome, which is a mix of conditions that includes high blood pressure, high blood sugar, excessive weight gain, all of which increases your risk for diabetes, heart disease, and strokes.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, there's more. And another 8-year-long study between 1979 and 1988.
Okay, so this is older.
Yeah, long study, which is what you need. You need long time periods of studying anything. So whether it's taurine and energy drinks or diet soda on humans, from 79 to 88, participants who started out at a normal weight and drank an average of, are you ready for this, 21 diet sodas a week.
Well, it's not hard to get to.
No, I probably drank double that.
Yeah.
Faced double the risk of becoming overweight or obese by the end of the study compared to the people who avoided diet sodas altogether. To add insult to injury, artificial sweeteners in diet sodas can be hundreds of times sweeter than sugar. So our brains think we're getting more calories than what we give it, thus leaving our brains wanting more, which of course means you want to drink more soda and you want to eat more food. And that's why you gain weight when you drink diet soda.
Yeah.
It's what I do. I'm just here to inform people.
Yep.
That's it.
Good talk.
So let's end the show talking about Kobe Bryant because Mamba Day is coming.
I'm
824, Nike.com.
I'm really close to wanting to buy the all black ones.
The new Kobe Bryant 80 comes out on Friday. I will not be buying it because I think it's ugly. But the 3-on-3 tournament, whatever they call it, the big three, has its championship game Friday night. So Steven Jackson was asked the other day in a news conference, hey, do you think Kobe Bryant could handle the physicality of the big three? By a stupid, clearly unintelligent reporter.
Wait, let me just...
This is a horrendous question.
Be better tomorrow.
Thank you, LeBron. But Steven Jackson, of course, did what we all would have done, which is freaked out and said, hello, Kobe Bryant's one of the greatest players ever. Of course he can handle it. But it made me wonder, is there a guy that you'd really like to see play in the big three? Like in the 3-on-3 tournament, is there somebody that stands out to you and you're like, damn, I'd love to see that guy in the big three? Because Kobe does come to mind.
Yeah.
I'd love to, you know who I'd love to see? Shaq. Shaq could be the guy that would just destroy people.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
Like,
for sure.
You have to be the guy that's big and explosive but can still shoot. So LeBron James would destroy people. But thinking back through the NBA and in the times that I played, I think Scottie Pippen would be a great big three player. I think almost any high-end player, who's the best player in the NBA, right? LeBron. I don't know about Steph. Steph would just be a shooter.
No, Steph needs a transition game. He wouldn't be good in the big three.
Yeah, I think he would struggle a little bit. Kyrie Irving.
Would be dominant.
Would be dominant.
Yeah.
I
mean, Steph could still dominate because, I mean, he's got handles.
Yeah.
I mean, he could still, yeah.
Yeah, but he's frail. And you can't, the one thing that people don't understand about the big three is that it's an ass whooping. It is one of those leagues where you have to be in really peak physical condition to do well. So I would like to see those guys. Obviously, the Jordans, the Magics, those guys would do really well.
I think John Wall would do really well.
Well, because he's a bigger point guard. That's a good point. Dame, I think, would be fantastic. Donovan Mitchell would be unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he'd be.
Zion Williamson one day.
Dude, how about what he's doing already at Duke? He's already Duke's best player.
Yeah.
Which is, if you're, and I hate Duke. I'm a North Carolina guy. I can't wait to watch Duke play. Like, yeah. Duke Carolina this year, like the big, big games
I'm
for Duke.
I'm looking forward to watching him.
Zion looks unbelievable.
And if you don't follow Overtime on Instagram, you're missing out.
You're dumb. You're not doing it right. You're dumb.
Good
you're
talk.
Not doing Life Right. But is there one guy you'd like to see? Is there, like, because again, I think my guy is Shaq. If I have to pick one guy, Shaq would be awesome. In his prime, of course, Shaq would be awesome.
Because Ben Wallace in his prime would be awesome in the big three.
Oh, Ben. Well, but he can't shoot. Shaq can't shoot either. He'd just dunk on people. Ben Wallace would be interesting. Rebounding's a huge part of winning in that league. I mean, it is a huge
Ron
part
Artest
of winning.
Would be great. Oh, wait, he plays in the big league.
He plays in the big league, and he's terrible. Yeah. In the big three, and he's terrible. He's not good at all. Anyway. All right. There you have it. What about Dwayne Wade? Does Dwayne Wade play in the big three at any point?
He's one of those guys where I'm like, nah, you might, like, nah, you're better than the big three. You don't need to do that.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Millennials.
Yeah. Okay.
You can roll the music. We'll talk about this over the music. Millennials, 34% of millennials believe the earth is flat.
I just don't get it, dude.
Like, are you proud to be a millennial?
I just don't think about it like that. I mean, I guess not, because every time we talk about it, millennials are dumb or they're doing something stupid or, like, you know, there's always just some kind of...
They don't know how to date. Yeah, they don't know how to talk. Know, they don't like, talk to each other.
We're too much into our phones.
Get your face out of your tablet.
We're failing at life. Like, we get it.
Yeah. Okay. Do you know anybody who thinks the earth is flat?
Not anybody in my personal circle.
Because I'd love to meet the 34% of millennials who think the earth is flat. What is one, like, give me one piece of evidence. Because I can't find it. I can't. By the way, tomorrow on the show, there's going to be an asteroid coming close to Earth that's bigger than a pyramid. But the Earth is flat, so there's no way to get out of the way, right?
Well, it'll just punch a hole in it, right?
You can go straight through to China.
Yeah.
You know, because when we were a kid, we used to dig through to China.
Yeah.
China. Anyway, find us on the iHeartRadio app, Stitcher, all those places. Anywhere you get your podcast, you can find The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. That's how you find me on Twitter as well. Until tomorrow, say goodbye, Jacob.
Goodbye, Jake.